Musings, a DC Comics podcast. I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
How's it going, Adam?
Pretty good. We got a big episode today.
We have
some big news to get to, and we have a movie review. As we told you, and as you've heard with our Man of Steel review, we are doing reviews of all four DC films, or DCEU, if you still want to call it that, films. Leading up to Justice League, which, as of this recording, is, I want to say, 19 days away. You check the countdown every 5 seconds, Jordan. When's the...
I check it on... BOF has their calendar countdown, and I want to say it was 18 days when I checked it this morning, I think.
Oh, okay, so. Even better. I made it longer so that when you actually correct me, it's shorter, so it's good. Because this episode is so big, you went into the multiverse and found us a guest, another guest. Why don't you introduce our guest, Jordan, and then he can tell us a little bit about himself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm really excited to have David C. Robertson on the show today, one of the hosts of the DC On Screen podcast, which is one of my favorite podcasts that I listen to. And so, David, say hi to everybody, man. It's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Hello, everyone.
All right, that's as good. Hey, it's a good introduction. It means we can get right to, I mean, of course, Jordan mentioned the podcast. Give it a look.
Yeah.
We'll put a link. When we post the episode, we'll put a link, and they can check you out from there, and then hopefully they'll enjoy your stuff like we do.
Yeah.
Let's before we get into the Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice review, and I'm sure this will cause a stir with some listeners because that movie is controversial to some. But before we get into that, we have some major DC on film news, and we actually have our Shazam, as most listeners of this show and David's show will probably know. Shazam is going to be directed by David F. Sandberg, and it's going to the plan is to start filming in February right here in my hometown of Toronto, or that's what I've read. And the search for Shazam has been ongoing for quite some time, and they found Shazam, and thankfully it's not John Cena. It is, in fact, Zachary Levi of Chuck fame. Let's start with you, David. What do you think of this casting?
Well, I never really watched a whole lot of Chuck. I watched clips. I saw episodes here and there. My co-host Jason was actually a pretty big fan, and for a while we lived together, and I would see bits and pieces, and you know, it was an enjoyable show. And I guess I saw him in Thor: The Dark World. I didn't notice they'd changed the actors for whatever that character was that looks like Green Arrow.
Yeah, I think it's Fandral.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I saw the name and I didn't. I kind of went, Chuck, really? And then I realized I was just grinning from ear to ear, and I said, "Well, I guess I like this. I don't know."
Yeah. Well.
But I'm down. You know, they're saying that he's his like manager or whoever's already talking about how he's in the gym training.
Apparently, I saw that too. He's doing like he did a 4-hour workout. It's more of a workout than I've done. So this. He's off to a good start. Jordan, what's your take on the Zachary Levi casting?
I have. I'll be quite honest. I have almost zero familiarity with this guy, but I'm really happy that we've got our Shazam now, and I've seen some fan art of him. Like Boss Logic did a really cool fan art of him in the costume. So I mean, he looks cool in the costume. So I've heard good things about him as an actor from people who are more familiar with him. So I'm excited to see him in the role, and I'm excited to see what he brings to it.
Yeah, Boss Logic, that guy, I'm convinced that that guy can make anybody look good as a superhero. I mean, he could put me in as Shazam and make it look good. His artwork, his fan art is great.
Does he do commissions?
I don't know, but I was thinking of maybe getting him to do a logo for the show or something, or I don't know. We'll figure it out. As far as my opinion, I really like this casting. I watched Chuck off and on, and I really enjoyed what I saw. Again, nothing extensive because even back then I found there was too much stuff on TV, and now it's even worse. So to go back and try and rewatch that show is not going to happen anytime soon. But from what I remember, I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed his performance. He's got that childlike, exuberance on it, like look on his face, especially. I saw some pictures of side by side of him and Shazam. And there was one where Shazam had was smiling, and their smile is eerily similar. So right there and then, he's got that very welcoming smile that you need for somebody like Shazam. Also, let's not forget that he's 6'3", so he's definitely got the height of the character. Now, I've seen, as typical with superhero castings, there's always outrage in some corners of the internet of, oh, he's too small and he needs to take steroids. And it's like, here's my reaction. Does anybody remember what Christian Bale looked like before Batman Begins? Or Chris Pratt before he played Star Lord in Guardians of the Galaxy? Or hell, Christopher Reeve before he played Superman? I mean,
Michael Keaton's a great example too.
yeah, but it's not like Michael Keaton bulked up crazy amounts to play Batman.
Yeah.
Let's remember, Christian Bale was coming off The Machinist, and he was almost anorexic before he became, just before he got the role of Batman. Chris Pratt was a little bit on on the chubbier side. Parks and Recreation, was it? No, was it Parks and Recreation that he was in, or was it?
Yeah,
Yeah, okay.
those parts.
Yeah,
Yeah.
okay. And so, look at him in Guardians of the Galaxy. This is not a non-issue. Like, to me, my main concern is get the actor that wins the part in the screen test, number one, and get the actor that's right for the role, first and foremost. You can turn a trained actor into a muscular looking superhero. You can't turn a wrestler like John Cena with no charisma, no screen presence, no experience into a qualified actor. Like the only look, and I know everybody's screaming, yeah, but what about The Rock? Yeah, here's the difference. The Rock had, a larger than life presence on screen. He had the ability to engage a crowd when he was in WWE, or when I used to watch it, WWF, the good old days. So there's a difference. He already had that in him. John Cena has none of that. So when I see online, oh, it should have been John Cena. No, like I can't act. Like you're better off getting a piece of wood and sticking Shazam's costume on him. It would have been cheaper. So I mean, this idea of he's too small, it's just a ludicrous complaint. Like if somebody tells me they don't like Zachary Levi as an actor, that's fine. That's your prerog- like you've seen him and stuff, and you don't like him. Well, then hey, I can't argue with that. But to say that, oh, he's not big enough, it's called a gym. It's an easy fix. So that's my take on it. I like it. I'm on board. I can't wait to hear more casting. Who's going to be Billy Batson and such, and who the villain is, because The Rock is not in this one as Black Adam, or so we've been told. So who the villain is going to be an interesting discovery as well. So that's our take. Can't wait to find out more. Let's get into DC film or DCEU film number two. That is Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. Jordan, as we always do, or as we started doing since Batman versus Two-Face, Why don't you give us the summary for the film, and then what we'll do is we'll go with our likes. We'll go through all three of our likes, then we'll go through our dislikes, and then, we'll go from there.
Alrighty. Well, so you just want me to read the IMDb description again?
That's it. Yeah, nice and simple.
Fearing that the actions of Superman are left unchecked, Batman takes on the Man of Steel while the world wrestles with what kind of hero it really needs.
That's shorter than I would have done it, but good. Look, by the way, before we get into anything, and I know the movie's what, 2 years old now? Is that it? Am I right on that?
Almost.
No, it's a year and a bit. It's a year and a bit, not two, exactly two. It should have been 2 years old because it should have came out in 2015, but whatever. So as always with this podcast, there may be spoilers, but again, the movie's almost 2 years old. If you haven't seen it by now, you're not going to. But there will be spoilers, so if you want to watch it, and you haven't.
I have a question.
Sure.
Are we doing the theatrical cut or the ultimate edition?
Ultimate edition. That's what I want to. That's what I'll be referring to. But.
All right. Cool.
So yes,
that's the only version, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
but
I'm right there with you. So. The spoilers are in effect, so if you haven't watched it yet and you're intending to, leave now and then come back. But otherwise, we're going right over the spoiler wall. Just going to say that right now. Let's start with you, guests first. David, what were your first of all, overall impressions? Did you like this film? And then go into more specific what you liked.
I'm not, it's hard to say. I mean, yes, I did like it. It's hard to say that. It's hard to say what I would have thought about it were I not in a position of defense right out of the gate. Like, before I even went to see the movie, I was going, what is this going to be? Because of all the terrible reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I went, even after the theatrical version, I was like, it's flawed, but it's not 29% on Rotten Tomatoes bad,
Mm-hmm.
So, I had a lot of fun. I had more fun with this than any Batman movie before it. I saw more of the Batman iconography there. I enjoyed watching Batman and Superman fight. I liked seeing those Frank Miller panels on the screen. I didn't think it was at all as egregious as other people thought it was. And, Batman kills, but he didn't. He has an every live action movie that the character's ever been in, he's killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really get too angry about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I thought it was a pretty good movie for the most part.
All right. Jordan, let's start with your overall, before you get into specifics.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't consider this movie quite the masterpiece that I do Man of Steel, but I still really, really like this movie. This movie is so moving for me. It has so much emotional resonance with me, and it's so thought-provoking. And those are the three things that really stand out to me about this movie, in addition to the cast performances, because I just think it's a phenomenally cast film.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking on, just because David brought it up, speaking on the killing thing, here's the thing. David brings up a great point. Batman has killed in all live-action interpretations except for, I think, West and Clooney. And technically,
Clooney killed the franchise, so there is killing. Yeah, go ahead.
technically, Clooney is the same interpretation as Keaton and Kilmer.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, well,
but
he killed the franchise, yeah.
But. Anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent now. But my point being, in the past, there wasn't an excuse for it, though. With Affleck's Batman, he's a broken Batman. That's the Batman we got in BVS. He's a Batman. Alfred even says it in the movie. The rules have changed, and it's because this is a Batman who's lost a Robin. He's just felt powerless for the first time since his parents died, probably, when he watched Superman wreck through and kill all his employees without being able to do anything to stop him. And so this is a Batman who's in a very dark place. And so even though, yeah, I'd probably prefer that he didn't quite cross that line to kill, he actually has it works for the story here, I think, him killing in this movie. So yeah, I guess I agree with David there that didn't bother me too much. And overall, yeah, I really really like this movie. Like David said, I mean, going into the movie, like it was kind of, I seeing all the poor reviews, it sort of it was disappointing to see that. However, I don't really, in the past, I just haven't agreed with Rotten Tomatoes so much of the times. I haven't agreed with the majority of critics so many times. So I came into the movie still optimistic that I was really going to like it, and I was very pleased that I came out really liking the movie. And then once the Ultimate Edition came out, and the Ultimate Edition, I already really liked the movie, so the Ultimate Edition didn't really change much for me. I think it's a little bit better of a cut, but I already like the theatrical cut. But overall, yeah, both cuts of the movie, I'm a really big fan of.
Yeah, see, for me, when I. These two characters, Batman and Superman, are my favorite characters in fiction. I've, you know, once as a, once as a kid, I made the distinction, oh, they're in the same universe. I want to see them together in a movie. So I really was looking forward to this movie. I've wanted it for years. You know, it wasn't necessarily I got to see them fight, but because I read the Dark Knight Returns later in my fandom, but the idea of them together has always been something that I wanted. So I was really excited. And then, you know, reading Rotten Tomatoes reviews, I went in literally, it was like somebody, you know, stole my, if I was a kid, they stole all my toys. And it's like, what the, you know, so I went in there, I was like, what the hell am I going to watch here? What? My first thought was, okay, if these guys are right, what the hell did they do? So I was very, like you, it's like, it's hard to say what I would have, how I would have rated this or thought about this if let's say the reviews were good, like what were my expectations? But I, you know, I was still excited, but I was a little bit on a low, like I had lowered my expectations. Now, what I've decided to do going forward is not look at Rotten Tomatoes for any movie because I tend to, like Jordan, I tend to disagree with them more than I agree with them. And I think that system of the way they do things is flawed. But anyway, that's just that. But overall, with, you know, I really, really like this movie. Again, if I had to say, I think Man of Steel is a better film for certain reasons. But overall, I really, really like it. And as a fan of these two characters, I'm overly happy with it. And again, like both of you, I don't get the whole, oh my God, Batman killed, let's go lynch Warner Brothers, because you're right, he's done it in every other film. And Michael Keaton in Batman Returns attached a bomb to somebody's stomach, threw him in a hole, and smiled as he exploded. So I mean, you know what I mean? It's like it's not unprecedented. And like Jordan was alluding to, this Batman is essentially the Dark Knight Returns Batman. And so he's had 20 plus years of, you know, we saw the Jason Todd Robin costume. So he's seen a Robin die. Dick Grayson has presumably left him and gone off on his own, which we'll see thanks to Chris McKay. But so that took its toll on him. And so, you know, the Joker's out there and doing things. And so all that is going to weigh on him. And so it leads us to a Batman that's going to be, look, at this point, you know, he even says it. There's a line, something about, the, you know, to Alfred when he's like, well, we've always been criminals. You know, there's that. And one of the things, just generally, that I'm so surprised that they were able to do is tell two stories that I thought I'd never see on film, which are, or take two stories that I never thought I'd see on film and mesh them into one, which is The Death of Superman and The Dark Knight Returns. I never thought I'd see them on film. So I really, really, really enjoyed this film. Let's get into more specifics. Are there any like specifics, David, that you want to point out?
In regards to what?
Like, let's say, okay, so okay, so yeah, I'll prod you for some things. Let's say, what did you think of the fact that it was so intertwined with Man of Steel? Like, it was almost like a direct, like it was happening literally, like we pick up right as the events of Man of Steel are unfolding, the, you know, with the Black Zero and the, you know, the battle with Zod and those
I mean, I love that. I thought they could have done a lot more with that, honestly. Some of the reviews, some of the people complained that, you know, it leaned too heavily on Man of Steel. I don't think it leaned heavily enough. Because I enjoyed the fact that they sort of made a lot of the contentious points of Man of Steel into a contentious point for Batman and for a lot of the news media and politicians in this world, as it should have been. And I could have dealt with, if you want to know how to actually, pull in Aquaman, don't show him on a video. I say, like, bring him in as part of the UN. Like, he's already king of Atlantis. He's like, what did you do to my oceans with your world engine?
That's what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like the world engine. You're right. Yeah, that was my first thought when they said Aquaman. I'm like, all right, the world engine, we go, you know.
I thought Aquaman was going to have a lot bigger a role than he did, because he actually had an action figure, and like Flash and what's it, Cyborg didn't have action figures. Aquaman actually had an action figure for BVS, and he just had the same little video clip that Flash and Cyborg had. So I was actually surprised how little he was in the movie.
You remember they actually put out an action figure for the Luthor Lex Luthor battle armor with the BBS, and I was just beyond ecstatic for that, and I was sadly disappointed.
Point being, don't buy into everything you see in the action figures.
Yeah, seriously.
But no, it's like, yeah, with the whole connection, that was one of the things right off the bat that I love. That, to me, when that battle is happening and we see it from Bruce Wayne's perspective, when, first of all, that shot of Bruce Wayne when everybody's running away from the disaster and Bruce Wayne's running towards it is such heroic imagery to me, you know what I mean? Like seeing Batman run into the danger, I thought, and just like the smoke, and it was just what a great shot. But the moment where Batman or Bruce Wayne saves that girl from the falling beam there, and then he asks her, "Where's your mother?" And the kid looks up and she's crying, and then he hugs her and he looks up and he sees Superman and Zod. To me, like right then and there, he's now equating Superman and, by Zod, whatever, but these Kryptonians with, in that moment, I thought, okay, right then and there, he sees these Kryptonians as, like a Joe Chill scenario. They've done to this girl what Joe Chill did to him,
Yeah, I've never thought about that exactly. That's interesting.
which to me makes perfect sense why he would have a hatred to Superman. Of course, there's the larger issue of, if this guy, look, he says he's a hero and he says he's this, but if he goes off the rail, it's that whole 1% chance, basically,
Yeah.
if he goes nuts, we're all screwed. But besides that, I felt the joke, the comparison with he that little girl had the same thing happen to her, not exactly the same, but you know what I mean. The same thing happened to her that he felt with Joe Chill and Superman, not really, but Zod, but Superman, quote unquote, in Bruce Wayne's eyes, was responsible for that.
And one of the reasons Bruce trained himself to be Batman was because in the moment where his parents died, he felt powerless. There was nothing he could do to save them, and so he trained himself to make sure that that wouldn't happen to anyone else. And he was very successful in that, I'm sure, in 20 years in Gotham. And then what he sees right here with Superman is he literally there is nothing he can do to stop this superpowered being that is flying through this building and orphaning this girl that's standing right in front of him. There's nothing he can do to stop that. So he feels powerless again and helpless again, despite the fact that he's trained himself to become Batman. So that's what fuels his rage, and that's what Alfred talks about later when he says that feeling of powerlessness that turns good men cruel, and it all stems back to that, in my opinion.
So it sounds like we all really were on board with Batman's motives and the reasons why he took up the fight against Superman. And what I liked about the way what this movie did is they sort of flipped the Dark Knight Returns script, whereas in that one, Superman was the antagonist, right? And in this one, they flipped it so that Batman is the one taking the charge towards Superman. I thought that was very clever, and the fact that they were able to fit, to manipulate the Dark Knight Returns into elements of it into this story, I thought was very well done. And the other thing that I'll point out is specifically that I liked the whole 20 years thing. I really in little bits of dialogue, I really believed the relationship between Bruce and Alfred in this. And I thought Jeremy Irons and Ben Affleck were great together in that respect.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What about you, Jordan? Did you were you were you did you find that believable, the Alfred and Bruce dynamic?
Oh, absolutely. I really enjoyed what we saw of Bruce and Alfred in this movie. I mean, Alfred just with his sarcastic quips to Bruce, it felt very much like, I mean, they've been doing this for years. That's what it felt like to me. And then speaking to the 20 years thing, that's one of the things that I love so much about this movie is the fact that previously with Batman on film in live action, we've never gotten a Batman that has this kind of history, that presumably has encountered a large portion of his rogues gallery already. And here we've got a Batman who's been around Gotham for 20 years. He's fought the Joker before. Presumably Harvey Dent's already Two-Faced based on the line in this movie. It's like all this stuff has happened, and it makes this a very unique Batman to the previous one seen in live action on film.
Yeah, I really liked the older Batman because, like you said, I mean, in the Nolan Burton trilogy, let's assume that the events of those film happened maybe over a 5 or 10 year period. Like you could headcanon could tell you that, with the inclusion of Robin and later on Batgirl, God help us all, that could have happened in a 5 to 10 year span. With the Dark Knight trilogy, they flat out tell you that between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight Rises, 8 years passed, I think, because Batman Begins and like The Dark Knight picked up literally almost right after the events of Batman Begins, and then from Dark Knight to Rises, it was 8 years. So that's why I say 8 years span. So this is the first one, like both of you are saying, it gave us an older Bruce Wayne, and it's a different perspective. It's Batman coming from a different place, and I just love that, and also the possibilities it brings for the future in terms of, now Matt Reeves can go back and tell whatever story he wants from in that 20-year period if he so chooses. So it gives him a lot of leeway as well. What did we all think of Lex Luthor and specifically the way he what I say what I loved about it is Jesse Eisenberg's obviously portrayed Lex Luthor, but what I loved about the character and the way he was written is the fact that he manipulated both Batman and Superman, in the sense that he with Batman with the whole remember the whole part about in the when prisoners were caught and put in jail with the Bat Brand, they were killed. So in Clark's mind, when he's investigating the Batman, it's almost as if Batman is condemning him to death. But then because of the extended edition, we find out that Luther is sort of, orchestrating from the outside for inmates to kill to murder people with the Bat Brand. So he's already like he's manipulating Clark into thinking that Batman's this crazy killer, a costumed killer, and conversely, he's prodding Bruce Wayne on by saying, with those notes, you let your family die, and he's making Bruce feel responsible for what was the guy's name, Wallace, Wallace Keith or Keith or whatever the heck his name was, and the way he manipulates that whole thing. In the with the, in the hearing in the Senate building, the way he uses Wallace, and with the guise of, oh, I can give you a voice, and the whole thing about manipulating people. So he's manipulated Batman or Clark into thinking Batman is this killer. He's reinforcing the idea that somehow about Superman that you know, all he causes is death and destruction, and he's done that twice with the whole Africa incident, you know, manipulating that scenario, and then manipulating, like you said, the Senate hearing where he plants the bomb in the wheelchair, but it's lined with lead, so Superman can't see it. But everybody from the outside looking in, you know, is blaming Superman for this event. It's like everything Superman touches, you know, turns to disaster. And Lex is manipulating that perception that some people have. And I loved that aspect of Lex's character. And the fact that he was the smartest guy in the room and sort of already knew that Batman was, you know, Bruce Wayne was Batman and Clark Kent was Superman. Those aspects of Luthor is stuff that I really gravitated towards. What were your thoughts on that aspect of Luthor? Start with our guest, David.
Well, I mean, it felt like Luthor in that way. It felt like they were doing something fresh with him, though. I was glad to not see the what is it? Kevin Smith calls him the Midwestern huckster version of Lex Luthor from the Donner films.
Yeah,
and I
hate that version. I know everybody loves the Donner films, but I hate that version of Luthor. I just
You know, it's fun, but it's not my preferred version. But you know, at the same time, while I like what Jesse Eisenberg did with it, I was honestly hoping for more of a Mark Zuckerberg from Social Network type of feel from him. I don't agree that he was really the Jim Carrey's Riddler in Batman Forever, though. He has long hair and he's a little quirky. That's about all you can pull from that.
Yeah.
But same time, I think they probably should have gone with something a little more traditional, it being the first time Batman and Superman are on screen together, you know, trying to introduce people to an entirely new cinematic universe. If they wanted to make him a little quirky, they should have, you know, introduced Lex to some sort of alien AI or something. I mean, they already did. They did that in the movie anyway. But, mm-hmm. you know, make him quirky after that, where it's like it shows that his brain is a little broken from that. I think I may have preferred to have seen the Clancy Brown Superman the Animated Series version of Lex Luthor instead of what we got. But I still enjoyed this rendition. And I'm honestly going to be kind of sad if he doesn't show up in Justice League, because they're talking that, you know, his stuff might be cut.
Yeah, we've heard that too. But I like what you said there about, you know, they could have made him more quirky after the exposure to the apocalyptic or Kryptonian technology. That would have been a smarter choice, because that was one of my – look, again, I don't prescribe to the theory that he was the Riddler just because, well, he has long red hair. Okay. But whatever. But so I don't prescribe to that. But the quirks were a little bit off-putting in his performance. Now, I don't know if that was written that way or if that was the actor's choice. I have no idea. So I can't put blame one way or the other. But I didn't really care for those quirks. They didn't add to the character for me at all. But and like you, I would have liked it to see something more along the lines of a Clancy Brown slash and a Jordan, This Is For You, Michael Rosenbaum
absolutely
version of Lex Luthor. But I, you know, like even the line when he, you know, his motivations for you know, having this disdain for Superman, I thought were, you know, in the extended cut, were laid out pretty well and were believable, and so in that respect I enjoyed that. And again, his manipulation of every situation was more akin to Luthor than what we've seen in on film anyway. So I appreciate that. Jordan, what were some of your likes and dislikes in regards to Jesse Eisenberg and Lex Luthor?
Okay. Well, here's the thing. You laid out some of his actions in the film, and I really liked Luther in this film from that perspective, in terms of his actions, in terms of his motivations. I liked all of that. However, Eisenberg's performance is one of the things that holds me back from calling this film a masterpiece, because I just didn't care for his performance, for that interpretation of Luther. Here's the thing with it. I respect the fact I'm always open to when they go in a different direction with a character, when somebody tries to do their own take on the character. It's just that sometimes it's going to work, sometimes it's not going to work. In this particular instance, it didn't work for me, and I sort of am able to justify it by the fact that this is technically Lex Jr., so technically Lionel would be his grandfather, not his father, and Lex Sr. would be his father. I get that, but here's the thing. We have not gotten a traditional Lex Luthor on film before. Here's the thing. Michael Rosenbaum did it perfectly on Smallville. I mean, he did it phenomenally, and I just don't understand why we can't get that in a live-action movie. Hackman, as funny as I think he is in the Christopher Reeve films, he's not Lex Luthor. He's not the Lex Luthor I want to see. He's not the calm, calculated, intelligent businessman that I want to see. Kevin Spacey at times gave me that, but at times it felt like that they were just trying to get him to do a Hackman impersonation, which I get because they were trying to set it in the same universe as the first two Reeve films. But at the same time, it's like that's he did it at times. There were times in the movie when I was like, man, Spacey could have been a great Lex Luthor. There's this particular scene, he did it how I wanted it, but then at other times he just did this. He just basically did a Hackman impersonation, and then we got Eisenberg, and it's like. I had the same problem again. It's like, why can't we get he's I mean I Eisenberg's a great actor, and I think that he did I think that for what he did was he did a good job in the movie for what he was trying to do. But it's like, maybe I wouldn't have been so mad about it if at some point we had gotten the traditional Lex Luthor in a live action movie before this, and then they could go in a different direction. But it's like, time and time again, they just don't go in the direction I want them to in a live action movie. And it's like, Michael Rosenbaum set the template for what that should look like in live action, and it's like, I wish we could get that in a movie though. And I mean, so that's where I stand on it. Like I said, I really like the way he was written in terms of his actions and his motivations, but in terms of the performance, I just didn't care for it.
Like, to me, what I can say to sort of kind of reconcile some of the things, if you look at this version of Lex Luthor, it's very much the closer to the Birthright version, where he had that a little bit of mad scientist and sort of business kind of businessman thing going. There was influence from that for sure. In this version, with what I'll say about with Clark and Superman, I really like the fact that we're dealing in a we're in a world in this follow-up to Man of Steel, where there's a portion of the world that loves Superman and loves that he's doing his thing, and there's another portion of the world that absolutely thinks he's doing the wrong thing and he needs to stop. And the reason why I like this is because, again, it's a real world look at, if this alien came down to Earth, what would the reaction be? This is closer to the reaction that we'd get if this was a real world situation. There would be people that love him and people that are afraid and worried of is he gonna go nuts? Is he gonna kill us all? Like, what I've never been able to reconcile in previous movies is this idea of, as soon as Superman shows up, everybody's smiling and happy and singing Kumbaya by a campfire, and they absolutely love this guy. There's no, in the world, like, look, this is the world we live in. We're afraid of things we don't understand. It's just as simple as that. I mean, there are segments of our population that can't get along with each other. I mean, people want to deport other people because they're different. Like, look at the world we're living in. This is a reflection of whether, that's a reflection of this world. And I like that Snyder tried to do something deeper. And the fact that Clark is like, the argument of Superman never doesn't smile. Well, hold on a second. He does when he's with Lois, because to me, again, that's his, he, Lois and his mother are his tethers to humanity at this point, okay? So when he's with them, he does have moments to smile and appreciate life. But imagine you are in his shoes and half the world blames you for every wrong that's happening, and they're telling you to get lost. Would you be in a happy-go-lucky mood? I wouldn't be. So I totally get that perspective that Superman is going through. And I love Zack Snyder's real-world application of what he's trying to do here. What I did love that the Ultimate Cut did was it showed us Clark Kent, the reporter, where he's actually investigating Batman. And he goes to Gotham and he's talking to citizens about Batman and their reactions to Batman. I love the fact that we got reporter Clark actually in this movie, in the extended cut. And I, for the love of God, I can't understand why they cut that out. I think it's integral to the plot. I also really loved Lois, and they continued to show her as a competent reporter in this. They continued that trend for Man of Steel, I think. I really liked that aspect of it. And I'll say this. I really loved Perry White from Man of Steel, the way Lawrence Fishburne played him. But this movie takes him further to the Perry White that we're used to in the comic books. And I thought he gave a great performance again in his limited role. And I was actually surprised to see another shock. I was surprised to see the return of Pa Kent in spiritual form or dream form or what have you. Kevin Costner was back in this. What were your guys' take on Superman and Clark Kent in this, David?
It's gonna pretty much echo what you said, man. I think I was happy to see Clark in the Ultimate Cut really get a chance to be a reporter. Superman, you know, a lot of people were, you know, saying he wasn't very heroic. He wasn't, you know, what a traditional Superman should be. I kind of felt like we got the montage of him saving lots of people. We get even Affleck or Batfleck referring to whenever he saves a cat out of a tree. Mm-hmm. So we got that a little bit, you know, we got references to him being a very Reevesian type of Superman, but that's not what the movie was about. And, I was pretty okay with him not being all smiles, but you know, I was going to say, you know, he seemed to be smiling a lot when he was in that bathtub.
Yeah, I don't think Lois was smiling afterwards when she had to clean up all the water. But all right, we'll go. I guess he could have done it, right? He could have easily taken care of that situation. But
yeah, just heat vision it, and make it evaporate. Yeah, make Jordan, a sauna for him.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly. Jordan, what were your takes on Clark Kent and Superman? And if you want to throw in your thoughts on Lois and Perry as well, you guys can both do that.
Oh yeah, sure. I again, just like in Man of Steel, I loved Henry Cavill's take on both Superman and on Clark Kent. You mentioned in the Ultimate Cut how we really got to see a lot of him as a reporter, and that was one of the things that did make the Ultimate Cut a little bit better for me, because I like that they explored Clark as a reporter, because obviously since Man of Steel took place before he joined the Daily Planet, we didn't see much of that in that movie, well, any of that except for that final scene. And then in the BVS theatrical cut, we didn't really see it, but in the Ultimate Edition, we did. And I really thought that was a great addition to see Clark Kent in his civilian life, to see what he was up to, and it obviously related right into what was going on in terms of what he was doing as Superman as well in this movie. So I thought that was great. And again, Superman and Clark Kent, just Henry Cavill, both he does a great job portraying both. So I love that. And you brought up the scene where he sees Jonathan, and that was a nice surprise, because I didn't realize Kevin Costner was going to come back. So I liked that they kept that under wraps, or at least I think they did. If they didn't keep it under wraps, then at least I wasn't spoiled on it. So I was very happy to see that scene. I think that's a really beautiful scene, because in the movie, and this touches back to what you were talking about how Superman is everything he tries to do, he I mean, the reason that Superman is sort of, people say that he's not smiling so much in this movie or whatever. I mean, he has good reason for it, and it's because everything he tries to do gets this backlash. Every time he's trying to help people, there's all these people condemning him for it. And so I love that conversation he has with Jonathan. I think it's really touching where Jonathan gives him this advice, and he's talking about how sometimes it's a lose-lose situation because he saved his farm and then the Lane farm. And again, I really like that nod to, everybody knows how big a fan of Lana I am. So any nod to Lana Lang, I love. So the Lane farm washed away. And so I love that conversation. And it reminded me, I'm going to bring up Smallville again just because I'm a roll with that. In the Smallville season 10 premiere, there's a great scene that I love where Clark has a vision of Jonathan. And this sort of, I don't know if it was intentional, but for me, it was a callback to the Smallville season 10 premiere. But in terms of some of the supporting characters of the Superman mythos in this movie, I loved Amy Adams again as Lois. I thought she did a great job. And also Perry White, again, did a great job reprising his role as well, because Perry White, people say there's no humor in this film. And that just, I feel like that doesn't ring true for me, because Perry White, just like Alfred I mentioned earlier on, he had a lot of funny, sarcastic quips. Perry White in this movie added a lot of humor for me as well. Like every time I watch the movie, I just chuckle at the water wet. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And so I really loved all three of those characters in this film: Superman, Lois, and Perry.
Yeah, I don't understand the no humor comment. Like, look, it's not the trailer for Thor: The Dark World, Thor Ragnarok, which is every piece of dialogue seems like a joke. But like you said, Alfred's quips, like when he's talking about, there's the scene where he goes to Bruce's penthouse or lake house, and he sees the empty bottles of alcohol, and he's like, something to the effect that you should leave some for future generations of the Wayne family. Not that there's going to be any.
I think it's a line pulled directly from The Dark Knight Returns, if I'm not mistaken.
It could be. It could very well be. And also,
I think so.
Right. Yeah. And then when he's at Lex's fundraiser, when Bruce is at Lex's fundraiser, and Alfred's, you know, guiding him to get the information on the data drive, he's guiding him through the building, and he's like, head upstairs, and something about a woman from Metropolis or something, you know, he made a joke about that, which I thought was funny. So there was humor there, and again, it's not overt and in your face, but it's there. So to say that it's not is inaccurate. And what I'll say now, that since I brought up Bruce Wayne again, what are we, before we get to Doomsday, what are our thoughts on Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne and as Batman? I know that, like, I loved seeing the playboy, arrogant Bruce Wayne facade, especially that sort of condescending tone that he has with Clark at the party, and then that drunk routine that he has with Mercy Graves, I think it is. When she sort of kind of catches him at the, trying to extract that information. And even that, like, I love that in that scene, Batman's doing some detective work. And throughout this film, you see him doing a little bit of detective work. And again, I think that is an aspect of Batman's character that gets overlooked in a lot of these films. So I'm glad that it's there. I guess I'll just say it now because we're on the topic. I think his Batman is fantastic. I go back and forth between, is it my favorite? Like, I don't want to give it away because we're doing an episode where we pick our all-star cast of the Batman franchise using the different actors that have portrayed these characters throughout different films and such. So I'm not going to give it away, but his Batman is fantastic. And his look, The Batman comic, say what you want. Some people are Snyder, you know, they don't like Snyder, but say what you want about Snyder. But him and the costume designer, Michael Wilkinson, came up with the best looking Batman costume, the most accurate looking Batman costume I've ever seen on film, period. And I'm talking about the main one, the regular one that he wears. But then also the Dark Knight Returns inspired mech suit was also straight up right out of the comics, and I just, to me, it was fantastic. So, David, what are your thoughts on Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne and Batman?
Best rendition of either. I would say, as far as live action is concerned, he is Bruce Wayne, he is Batman. He did a fantastic job pulling both off. I look forward to seeing more from him if he's able to, with the allegations that are swirling around Affleck at the moment. You know, that might be a little uncertain, but yeah, his version of Batman.
Worst comes to worst, at least we have one more go around in Justice League. But I couldn't agree with you more. And do you have a preference on like which costume of the two? It was there one that you like more? What did you think of the two costumes? The Batman outfits. What was your take on that?
I mean, roughly what yours was. I was really excited to finally see a what I felt to be a comic book accurate rendition of the Batman suit. I was never a big fan of the Christian Bale version. I never really cared for like the, I mean, you know, I enjoy like the old Michael Keaton version for nostalgia's sake, but we haven't had like a comic book accurate Batman costume since West. So I was pretty excited to see that, honestly.
Awesome. Jordan, what was your take on Bruce Wayne, Ben Affleck as, I almost just called him straight up Bruce Wayne. Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne and Batman and well, I already know you're gonna sit with the costume, but give tell the listeners your ridiculous comment about the costume. Go ahead.
Well, that sort of re-emphasizes how much you loved him in the role that you just call him Bruce Wayne instead of Ben Affleck. So that's
yeah,
actually kind of
he's
funny.
it's almost as if Affleck has disappeared. Whenever I see it, it's like, oh yeah, there's Bruce Wayne.
Well, I loved him in the role. I did. He's my second favorite Batman and my third favorite Bruce Wayne in live action. So
Well, now you spoiled the future episode. Way to go, Jordan.
no, not because I didn't reveal who's number one. I didn't reveal who was number
Fair
one.
enough. Yeah, fair enough.
No, I really loved him in the role. I thought he added so much emotion to the role, and I really liked seeing an older Batman in live action where he's had, like I talked about earlier, where he's had history. In terms of he's probably the most physically suited actor to ever play the role in live action, and I thought that was really cool. I mean, I don't know if we were gonna get to the fight scenes later or right
Yeah,
now, but I will just.
we're gonna talk about the action and visual effects. That I want to leave a separate.
Okay, all right. Well, all I say for now is that his fight scenes were phenomenal. And I'll in terms of his suit, Adam, yeah, you already know where I stand. It is not my favorite live action bat suit, but I do really love it, and I love how both his suits in this film, both his regular one and his mech suit, are both very much inspired by the Dark Knight Returns. I think that's really cool how comic accurate they are. So yeah, I loved Affleck in the role.
And in case David doesn't know, we had a poll purposely because Jordan brought up this ridiculous idea that the Dark Knight costume was better than Affleck's. So we had a poll on Facebook and Twitter, and Jordan lost big time. And the right the correct opinion prevailed, and Ben Affleck's version won out. So Jordan, sucks to be you in that regard. But and what I will say about Bruce Wayne and Batman in this film, just to before we move on to Doomsday, is that he does have he does have an arc, like he at the or I guess it's going to play through Justice League, but he starts off with that hatred towards Superman, but then throughout the film and with Superman's ultimate sacrifice, he understands that, like, he's inspired by at the end by Superman's sacrifice. And so there is this, it's not like Batman hasn't you know grown even within the course of this film. He's sort of Superman's sort of taking him out of the darkness. You know, of course, it took his death to do that, but or in part to drive that point home. But Superman does give Batman hope, which is what we've been told and what we know Superman to be is hope. So he does throughout the course of the film end up being that hope for Batman, that restores that hope in humanity for Batman, and I really really like the way that played out. Now I gotta bring this up. I there's no point in doing this during the action and special effects portion, but we all know Batman and Superman fought, and there was a point where Batman looked like he was going to kill Superman with the kryptonite spear, and then at that point, because Lex had kidnapped Martha Kent, and you know Superman was trying to find Martha, but then Lex sort of made gave him an ultimatum: either you fight and kill Batman, or I'm gonna have Martha killed. So anyway, Batman's got the spear pointed at Superman. He's got his neck, his foot in his throat, and is about to drive it through. And then Superman says, "Save Martha." He repeatedly says, "Save Martha." And then Batman starts asking, "Why did you say that name?" Then Lois comes in and says, "That's his mother's name." And then Batman pauses, stops, staggers, throws the spear away, and then eventually sees the error of his ways and promises that Superman go deal with Doomsday and Lex while he'll save Martha. You know, a lot of people online have criticized this point in the film, saying that the only reason Batman and Superman ended up getting along and stopped fighting in this film is because they have mothers with the same first name. This has become a meme. This has become a recurring joke in Marvel Comics. And I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one here. Maybe it's me and there's something wrong with me. But there's something far deeper about that scene than just the surface level of both of their mother's name being Martha. Like, there's a reason why they showed us the Wayne murders again in this film. And as when Clark starts to say, "Save Martha," and Lois reiterates that that's his mother's name, Batman gets flashbacks to his parents' death, and specifically to his father saying, kind of whispering the name Martha as he dies. To me, in that moment, when Superman says, "Save Martha," I think it clicks with Batman that several things click. First of all, that when Lois says that's his mother's name, suddenly Batman starts to look at Superman differently. He starts to look at him almost as a human and as somebody's son. That's the first part. Second of all, the minute... So that moment humanizes Superman for Batman. Secondly, he view those flashbacks in those as he's sort of visualizing in his head the murder of his parents. He's in that moment. I think he's seeing himself that his actions, if he goes through with this, he's no better than Joe Chill. He's becoming the person that he swore to fight off. That's why he stops. That's why he agrees to help Superman, in my opinion. Not because on the surface level, just that their mother's names are Martha. That's my take on it. And I think it's ridiculous that line gets so much hate and made fun of. Because it's like, look, if you don't like that scene, if you don't think, if you don't like that scene, if you don't get those deeper connections, then that's your prerogative. But I just don't understand how that's not clear to people. I just don't get it. What's your take, David? And then go to Jordan. What's your take on that whole scene?
Well, largely the same as yours. I imagine.
So I'm not crazy. It's not just me.
No, I mean,
Okay.
and that was also stated. It's also been stated in the commentaries and various featurettes by the filmmakers and actors that that was the point of the scene. I mean, they hammered it into your head. Like, I don't understand how all these people don't get it. But you know, as the fight progresses, you know, Batman keeps making statements, almost like he's trying to convince himself that Superman isn't a man, you know, like, you know, you're not brave, men are brave. So, and that kind of stuff, you know. So when I mean, sure, Martha, the name Martha jars him out of his, you know, his kill boner, but you know, I think it makes him realize that you know, that he would have never fathomed that Superman would have had a mother. And now suddenly, like, he has a mother, and she's in trouble, you know. So, you know, there's a lot to that, I'd say.
Cool. Jordan, are you in agreement with us? What's your take on this whole Martha?
Oh, I'm 100% in agreement with you guys. I really don't know how much I can even add to it. I think you guys both stated it beautifully. Basically, that scene was so emotionally powerful, maybe the most emotionally powerful scene of the movie for me. Like, I visibly choked up during that scene in the theater, and I'm pretty sure my heart skipped a beat for a second, like how shocked I was by the scene, how just emotionally resonant that scene was with me. Basically, I view it the same way as you guys do, and I think, Adam, you brought this up first, how Batman, he tried to justify basically murdering Superman by basically thinking of him as an alien. And it's the fact that in that moment, he realizes that, yes, Superman, it's not the fact that his mother has the same name as Batman's mother. It's the fact that he has a mother, and it's the fact that that humanizes Superman for him. And in that moment, Batman sees himself, I can't remember which one of you brought it up, but as Joe Chill. And basically, he sees himself as no better than Joe Chill in that moment. And he realizes that he has a chance to save Superman's mother in a way that he could not save his own. And it basically, it's so powerful, because you talked about it earlier, Adam, this arc that Batman has in this movie. And he gets brought back to the light, and it reminds me of this part in Man of Steel, the line that Jor-El has about you will take them into the light, Cal. And basically, that's what he does for Batman in this movie. He is that hope. He is that inspiration. And that gets more into his sacrifice. But this is the start of it, of Superman inspiring Batman to be the hero that that he used to be, presumably, as it's implied in this movie. And I think that's so powerful. And speaking, you brought it up briefly, Adam, I think, but we didn't touch on it before, but I just wanted to say this is the best version of the Wayne murders we've ever seen in live action. I don't care that we've seen it a billion times in live action, because Zack Snyder did something so beautiful with it. And the fact that they use that beautiful lie theme, the beautiful lie theme is so gorgeous. And then they repeat it here in this scene where Batman has the flashback. And I think that's such a brilliant use of the score. They play that during the Wayne beginning of the film, and then they play it again during the Martha scene. And I just thought it would.
Yeah, I mean, again, seeing the Wayne murder had a purpose in this film. That was the purpose. But, and again, you're right, it was beautifully shot. And I think it is the most beautiful rendition of it. And that's weird to say, because you're watching two people get shot. But the music, and let's just, before we get on to Doomsday, the beautiful lie track is one of my favorites. So is the I think it's You're My World or whatever, or something. That's the track name, but the one right before Superman makes a sacrifice. Those tracks did really elicit emotion from me. There are moments in this film where I teared up for sure. I loved three quarters of the score by Hans Zimmer and Junkie XL. Aside from Beautiful Lie, though, I wasn't a fan of his general Junkie XL's general Batman theme. To me, it sounded a bit too generic and more like his Mad Max theme than it did a specific Batman theme. It's, you know, like something you'd associate with Batman. Do either of you want to touch on your thoughts on that, on the score, before we move on to Doomsday?
I was perfectly fine with it. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I thought it all seemed really good.
So it all works for you. All right, cool. Jordan?
I agree. I love the Batman v Superman score. I agree. I wasn't in love. I liked the Batman theme that basically Junkie SL came up with. I didn't love it though. So I certainly don't like it as much as the Elfman or Zimmer Batman themes. But I thought it was all right. But yeah, Beautiful Lie is just, I mean, that's just such an incredibly emotional track that I just, it's really, I think it's just gorgeous, that track. And using the super, I mean, I just love Hans Zimmer's Superman theme. I loved it in Man of Steel. Man of Steel is my favorite film score of all time. And so just using it again in Batman v Superman, I mean, it obviously, I loved it here too. I'm going to say something a little bit controversial. I like it. I'm not in love with that Wonder Woman riff. I'm really not. I think it's all right. I'm not in love with it the way a lot of people are. I much prefer some of the tracks in the actual Wonder Woman movie that Rupert Gregson Williams did for the character. I know he incorporated that Hans Zimmer Wonder Woman riff into his score, but I really like some of the other stuff he added in that movie. I'm sure we'll get to that when we get to our Wonder Woman review. But for me, in BVS, that Wonder Woman track just isn't my favorite thing in the world. But overall, I mean, I thought the score was really, really, really strong. So I was impressed.
All right, fair enough. So let's talk Doomsday before we get to the action and the fight choreography and stuff. David, I'm going to let you start off on Doomsday. What I want to know from you is, did you like what they did with his origin? How they tied it to General Zod? Like, what were your thoughts on his origin? And then to kind of segue us into the visual effects, what did you think of his look?
I didn't feel like he looked like Doomsday necessarily, but I've never liked the design of Doomsday in any way, so I didn't really care.
Okay.
As far as his origin, again, I've never actually liked Doomsday very much, so I didn't really care that they changed his origin. I thought it was kind of a neat idea to do Zod as Doomsday. I liked that his killing of Superman mirrored Zod's killing of Jor-El. It was serviceable, for sure.
All right.
More than serviceable.
Cool, cool. Jordan, what's your take on the whole Doomsday thing, both look-wise and origin?
Yeah, his origin, I didn't mind at all. I actually liked it a lot, how Lex created him, and I really enjoyed that part of it. I'll still maintain that the best version of Doomsday in any medium is Smallville's version with Davis Bloom. But that's another story.
So you like the Incredible Hulk ripoff. All right, cool.
It was not a Hulk ripoff. What's that?
I didn't care for the Smallville version myself, man.
All right.
Two against three. Continue.
I guess that's a story for another day. But in terms of his look, I didn't care for that though. In Batman v Superman, in terms of Doomsday's look, it just wasn't frightening to me enough, and I just didn't like. I mean, somebody actually, Jerry Green from the Batman universe, brought this up to me on Facebook, and I never thought about it. But he said that his head looked like one of those Irish head turnips, and I can't think of anything more true than that. I mean, that's exactly what it looks like. And it's just, he did not look frightening to me, really. I mean, obviously I'd be scared shitless if I actually saw him on the street, but in terms of a movie villain that's supposed to be this big monster, he wasn't scary to me, really. And so I don't know. I didn't dislike him, but in terms of his look, I didn't care for that. But in terms of his origin, I was pretty fond of that. So.
Yeah. I'll say this. His look was okay. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. What I did like was the fact that he didn't come immediately full of spikes like the comic version. The spikes and the bone charts, they mirrored the comics in the sense that they grew and protruded more as he fought. So that attention to detail from Snyder and the visual effects team I liked. In terms of his origin, I think this is the only way you could have done it that made sense in this film universe, is connecting it to Zod. It's the only way, and it's kind of cool that it's basically a Kryptonian hybrid of with Lex's DNA. It's kind of sort of like a Frankenstein version of Superboy in that kind of sense, you know, the Kal-El version kind of thing. But I love that he's tied so intrinsically to Zod, who was a great villain in Man of Steel. And even certain mannerisms when he first arrives, when he crashes from that building, you know, when he destroys, you know, his superhero landing moment, if you will. The facial expressions reminded me so much of Zod, so I really appreciated that. And what you know, this will be the transition. What David had said about the way his killing of Superman mirrored the way Zod killed stabbed Jor-El. I thought that was like the way Snyder is able to call back to Man of Steel. In many of these sequences, I thought was great, and that one in particular. In terms of the rest of the action and visuals, I'll say this: the Batman versus Superman fight was really cool to see. There was a lot of callbacks to the Dark Knight Returns, but it was just a great fight sequence. One of the things I appreciated is the fact that, like, this film makes no bones about it that if it weren't for the kryptonite, Superman or Batman would have got destroyed. Like, yes, Superman gets his ass handed to him, but he does get a lot of good shots in on Batman. Like, there are moments where he's dominating Batman in that fight. And so I appreciated that it wasn't just a let's make Superman look like an idiot fest in those moments. Whereas in the comic, I thought in the comic, I thought Batman got way too much. You know what I mean? It was way too much overtly geared to Batman in that sense. Where I thought there was a better balance in this film. Batman still got the upper hand, obviously. But again, Kryptonite played a big hand in that.
What, in Dark Knight Returns, you're saying?
No, it was more, I thought it was, Batman got way more of an upper hand. Like, it was more overtly obvious in Dark Knight Returns, where, you know, it made Superman look, you know, I think came off looking worse. Whereas here, there's no mistaking that if it wasn't for the kryptonite, you know what I mean? They make a good,
right.
They make a good point of saying, look, if it wasn't for kryptonite, Superman would have destroyed him. And they show it in certain scenes. And the fact that you see Superman holding back, like when he was in control, you see him holding back, and I really appreciate that.
But, you know, in Dark Knight Returns, though, they were under a cloud. You know, they were under the bomb cloud, and he had been substantially weakened by that as well.
Fair enough. Yeah, good point. Good point. The other action scene I loved was the warehouse Martha rescue. To me, that is the best rendition of Batman fighting I have ever seen on screen, hands down.
Yeah, just looks like Arkham City.
It does.
Looks like video games.
it really does. And look, I know it was an Affleck doing most of it, but I don't care. It just looked fantastic. And coming as a person who, aside from the Batman Bane fight, when Bane breaks his back in Dark Knight Rises, I did not like the way Nolan and his choreographers had Batman fighting. I'm not bragging or anything, but I'm a martial artist. I've done karate for 20 some odd years. I'm a 4th-degree black belt, and I can tell you for a fact that if Batman fought like he did in the Dark Knight trilogy, He'd be killed in a week. He wouldn't last 8 years, I guarantee you.
Well, he didn't last 8 years. He lasted like a year and a half, and he retired for 8 years.
Also, good point. But I'm telling you from experience, that fight scene, it looks like he's doing more like an ab crunch workout than he is actually fighting in some of those scenes. So
no, I agree.
This fight choreography was honestly heads and tails. So much better than that, and good luck to Matt Reeves in this case for having to come up. I'm sure he can do it if he uses the same choreographers. Coming up with a Batman fight scene that can match that. I mean, let's see what Snyder does. It gives us in Justice League, but that was incredible. And the other thing I like that I want to get your thoughts on, in addition to the Batman fight scene, was the you know, when Superman flies Doomsday out into the atmosphere, mm-hmm. which was obviously a shot from a direct adaptation from the Superman Doomsday animated feature. It was a direct scene that Snyder pulled out from there. So if anybody that says Snyder doesn't get Superman, or doesn't care about Superman, or doesn't know anything about Superman's history, I'm sorry if you think that, you're a moron. But anyway, that scene, when Superman is just sort of there, almost looking half dead,
mm-hmm.
there's a moment where he looks like Bizarro. And honestly, if they ever bring Bizarro into this film universe, I want Bizarro to look like that in that one scene.
Well, I think that was more of a reference to The Dark Knight Returns, when the nuclear bomb goes off and it drains him.
But it also had a bit of Bizarro look to it, right? You know what I mean? That's more what I was getting at. Like, if you were gonna do a Bizarro kind of thing in the films, you could make him look like that and sort of get away with it, right? And make it look, you know, believable, I think. But what are you guys' thoughts on like, what stood out? What was your favorite fight scene? What stood out? David, what about you? Let's start with you.
I mean, you know, I think the popular thing to say, well, I don't know what the hell the popular thing to say is. you know, I don't, I'm going to say the Batman Martha fight scene, very close seconded by Wonder Woman fighting Doomsday.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. That was her entrance, and her minimal role in this film was great, but what an entrance. And unlike Jordan, I love the Wonder Woman riff. And just, I'm so glad you brought it up, because there was that one scene where that look on her face, where Doomsday, she's fighting Doomsday, and she's actually on the ground, but she has a smirk on her face.
Yeah.
That, I'm like, man, Wonder Woman is all, like, I've enjoyed the character in the past, but man, she's a badass, and Gal Gadot was great. I think that's further explored in the Wonder Woman movie, but you know, we'll get to that when we get to it. But I'm so glad that she had such an entrance and such a moment to shine, especially after all the hatred that she got when she was first cast. Wasn't me that was getting that hatred, but I felt some vindication for her there, and it was such a great moment. So I agree. It was definitely a close second to the Batman fight. Anything else you want to mention, special effects or fight wise?
I mean, I gotta say, I love the CGI capes. I don't know why. I've always I dig that. I dig that Snyder does that. When you look at the Nolan movies or anything that came before it, you know, the cape just it never looks like a comic book cape. The only movie he tried to do it before was Spawn, and it looked awful back then. But now I think we have it where it looks pretty good, and I love the billowing CGI cape. I know it's stupid, but
no, I agree with you. It's a great point. Just the way those look, they look so regal. So you know what I mean? It's great. And there was that one shot where Batman's like when he grapple hooks away from the building to get away from Doomsday's heat blast.
Yes.
And you see the lightning raining down. That was basically the cover shot of Dark Knight Returns.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'll say is, you know, visually, I don't think there's a filmmaker that can make a comic book movie look as much like a comic book than Zack Snyder can.
Yeah.
And you no matter whether you love or hate his films, you've got to give him props and kudos for that.
Well, you know, there's also James Gunn. James Gunn does a pretty great job of it as well.
Yeah, especially that whole, you know, Space Odyssey, that Kirby-esque kind of thing. Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
But Jordan, what was your take on the fights and the visuals? And is there anything particularly that stands out or that you want to mention?
Oh yeah, absolutely. For me, the Martha rescue is definitely number one in terms of fight scenes in this movie. Now, I love the way Batman fought in the Nolan movies because I thought it sort of. I love the way Nolan shot it from like a criminal's perspective, is the way he did it. I love that personally.
Yeah, it works for Batman Begins, but the other two it doesn't work.
Well, I loved it. I loved it in the other two too. But anyway, it talking about BVS specifically though, I loved it here. I love what Snyder did with this as well. And I thought that the warehouse, I think it was you, David, that mentioned it was just like Arkham City. And yeah, it reminded me of the Arkham games too. Just the way Batman moved, it was incredible in that Martha rescue scene. And the part that I've got to point out though, when he bursts through the wall and you get the Dark Knight Returns scene, and I'm there, I'm literally sitting there the first night in the theater when I first saw it, and I'm like, oh my god, is he gonna say it? Is he gonna say it? Is he gonna say it? And then he said the I believe you line, and I was like, oh my goodness, they did it. I mean, just throughout this episode, we've been pointing out all the Dark Knight Returns references in this movie, but that had to have been my favorite. I was just like, I thought I was going to scream in the theater when that first happened. It was unbelievable. And so, yeah, that whole Martha rescue scene was phenomenal. Probably the best Batman fight scene ever put in live action. I think that the Batman versus Superman fight, also very heavily inspired by the Dark Knight Returns. I think that one is also up there and probably also in the top five Batman fights in live action we've ever gotten. And I just thought that was, yeah, I mean, that's something that like I dreamed about seeing in live action for so long, seeing Batman and Superman duke it out, and to finally see that. I mean, it really was a dream come true. In terms of the Doomsday fight, that one. I don't hold in as high a regard as either of those other two, but I still liked a lot of it. And are we talking about this now? Because what I want to talk about that scene is, yes, Adam, you brought up the Wonder Woman stuff. And I mean, even though I'm not a big fan of the Wonder Woman musical riff, I still really liked her stuff in that. And the smirk that you brought up, I love it too, because it's carried over into all her other appearances so far in the DCEU, how she always does that smirk.
Well, Gal Gadot could smile and I'm done. Like that's see you later. There goes, you know, I turned to mush, but that's besides the, yeah, go ahead.
yeah, absolutely. Me too. Absolutely. The thing that I wasn't sure if you wanted to get to this yet, but the thing that I love so much about that scene though is Superman's sacrifice. So
We already started talking about it with the whole that it mirrors. Go ahead, yeah, talk about it because we talked about how it mirrors the Zod killing Jor-El.
And I love the side by side of that, the way Doomsday kills Superman and the way Zod kills Jor-El. But I just think as soon as you brought it up earlier, I think Adam, when the music kicks in and Superman has that thing with Lois with "You Are My World," and then he goes and it's just the music swells and I mean it's an unbelievable scene when Doomsday kills him, and then you see, I mean I was crying in the theater when it happens, when you see Superman there with Batman and Wonder Woman around him, and Wonder Woman gives Lois that look, and now after seeing Wonder Woman, that adds so much more to that look, because it's like Wonder Woman saw Steve Trevor make a similar heroic sacrifice,
right.
And now you see her looking at Lois, and it's sort of, now you can think of that look, and like she knows what Lois is going through there. And I mean, I just think it's such an emotional scene. And what I will say that, and this is another one of my, I guess it's sort of a complaint with this movie. I do wish, even though that scene worked for me so well on an emotional level, here's the thing with Superman dying. First of all, I think that we, One of my complaints about BVS is that I feel like there should have been another solo Superman film in between Batman, Man of Steel and BVS. So that's one thing. So I sort of think that killing him off this early into the DCEU in only his second film, that felt premature for me, especially given that we know that he's being resurrected in Justice League. It just feels too fast. It feels like I know what happened in the comics, obviously. He died and then he came back. For me, I'm just in general, I really take issue with when they do resurrections I know it's a staple of the comic book medium, but I take issue with resurrections because I think it takes away a lot of the stakes of death and it takes away a lot of impact of death. It's one of the problems that I've had with both the Arrowverse and also with what they've done with the MCU TV shows on Netflix. I just feel like in general, it's just too much resurrections. And the fact that the DCEU seems to be falling victim to this trope as well, it's a little bit frustrating to me. I know we have Justice League coming up, and obviously I want Superman to be in the first live-action Justice League film. But at the same time, it's like, let the death last for a while. It's like, they set it up really because there's nothing they can do. Obviously, we need Superman in the first live-action Justice League film, but I also don't want him coming back just one film after, or technically two, if you count, Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman. Those aren't the same trilogy for him. I don't want him coming back so quickly. With this.
Well, I mean, look, I get what you're saying. I mean, but you know, should there have been a Superman sequel before Batman versus Superman? Ideally, yes. But to me, the minute you bring in the character of Doomsday, you can't not kill him.
Smallville didn't.
Well, Smallville did it wrong. I'm sorry. Doomsday should have. Doomsday should have never been in Smallville, but whatever.
The Paul Dini animated universe didn't kill Superman with Doomsday there.
Right. And yeah, good point. But you almost got I don't think if you're gonna do the storyline, if you're gonna bring in Doomsday, in my opinion, you have to kill him. Now, whether you should have brought in Doomsday, that's a separate question. But in my opinion, if you're gonna use the character's whole existence was designed to kill Superman. So if you're gonna bring him in and not do it, you're kind of half-assing the story. If you're gonna do it, you're gonna do it.
I disagree with you, but in that case, don't bring in Doomsday. It's like it's just to you know you're doing a Justice League film next. You know you have to bring Superman back, so don't kill him off if you know you're gonna have to bring him back.
Fair enough. Yeah, like I said, I whether they should have brought in Doomsday or killed him this early, should there have been another Superman film before? Yes, but
well, see, I feel like Batman v Superman was a Man of Steel sequel.
Oh, yeah.
It was very much a Superman film, and I think what Zack Snyder had trouble reconciling was our cynical world coexisting with Superman. And I think what he came to is that you have to have him make some huge sacrifice for humanity. You have to show, you know, Batman and all the other heroes, you know, what you should be striving for. He had to die. He had to be the Christ figure. It goes along with the Man of Steel iconography, the Christ symbolism. He had to die. He had to die for him to come back and resurrect and save humanity in Justice League. I think it was a smart move.
Yeah, no, I like the movement, and I'm glad you brought up the Christ iconography, because you see it even when Batman is moving the body and he passes it to Wonder Woman. That is a clear, taking Christ off the cross reference visually. But I totally got Snyder's position, and you know that, so I'm okay with what they did here, because ultimately, whether they did it one, you know, two films down the line, three, you know, he's gonna come back, right? Like with that character, it's with Superman and with the whole Doomsday connection, it's already built in. It's a preconceived notion that he's gonna come back. There's no hiding it now. how they show that and how they deal with that in Justice League is going to be interesting, and I don't think it's going to be a scenario where, you know, within the first half an hour of the film, he's back. I think it's going to be a third act scenario where he comes back and eventually, essentially saves their asses. That's basically what I think is going to happen. But speaking of the death and the resurrection angle, what do we think of, like, does anybody have a problem with the fact that they showed the dirt ever so briefly rising up at the end? Because I've heard people complain about that.
I didn't have any problem with it.
Jordan?
I didn't have a problem with it specifically, except for the fact that as part of that larger complaint I had of them bringing Superman back so quickly after killing him. But in terms of that specifically, I didn't have an issue with it.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I guess that brings us to the end of our overall discussion and review of this film. Jordan, we didn't do this for Man of Steel, I don't think. I can't remember now. Did we rate Man of Steel or...
You know, I don't remember. I don't remember.
Because we rated Batman Two-Face, so I'm like, do you want to Batman versus Two-Face? Do you want to rate this?
I'm cool either way. I mean, if you want to, yeah. I mean, I'm down. But
all right, let's build some consistency here. David, you're our guest. What would you rate it? Either if you want to give a letter grade or a 1 out of 10, whatever you prefer.
I'd go with 7.5 or an 8 out of 10. I honestly think Orphan Fight is the best DCEU film so far.
That would have been a cool subtitle.
Right?
maybe if they do an even more of an extended cut, who knows? I think they're gonna double dip, or I guess, is it double dipping or triple dipping? I have a feeling with Suicide Squad, we're eventually going to see a cut where we see more of the Joker stuff added back in, but that's a discussion for another day.
Well, they did that already.
Yeah, but it was only like 3 actual minutes. According to Jared Leto, there's about half an hour of Joker stuff that was cut. So I wouldn't be surprised that by the time Suicide Squad 2 comes around, there'll be a recut of that again. Jordan, what is your grade?
Oh, okay. I'm gonna give it an I'm gonna do letter grades. I typically feel more comfortable with those, and I would give it an A minus. For me, it's my second favorite of the DCEU films. I like Man of Steel better, but I really like Batman v Superman. Like I said, I have some issues with it. Eisenberg's Luthor, the way they killed Superman. There was some complaints I had about that. But overall, just a really emotionally resonant film with me, a very moving film, a very thought-provoking film, like I said at the top of our show. And for me, I think it's a solid A-.
Yeah, and I'll go with an A- as well. I, as a lifelong fan of these characters, I was very satisfied with this film. And the inner child in me was happy, and the adult was happy, so... It's the best of both worlds. just before we wrap up, David, what's your temperature in terms of Justice League? How excited for it are you? What was your thoughts on how the trailer? What, you know, with how the trailers have been? What?
You know, with all of the talk about Emmett, well, Snyder leaving, and all the talk about, like, oh, well, how much is Whedon shooting and all of that, I kind of got a little bummed out and stopped being excited. But this last trailer, the Heroes trailer that came out, really pumped me back up, and I'm pretty excited to see the color palette has been brightened and altered. And I don't know how much of that was Whedon or how much of that was just like, hey, we have unfinished effects here, but we're going to put together the first couple of trailers. I'm digging it. I'm back to being excited about it. It looks like a Zack Snyder film with Joss Whedon dialogue, which is very exciting to me. I love Joss Whedon, his work anyway. It seems like all these people are coming out as awful misogynists. I don't understand. whatever. Adulterers and just kind of generally terrible people, but whatever.
Are adulterers in Hollywood really like marriages never last in that town? So is it really a shock?
Yeah, no, it's not a shock, but it's aggravating.
It's aggravating, but it's not shocking.
Because you're like, yeah, I like the Avengers. I'm like, oh, you like that awful person. Like, no, I'm not
No,
condoning
I
it.
just like his movies. He could be a
But
terrible
yeah,
person, but I like his movies.
I'm happy to see Whedon punching up the dialogue. I'm not a big fan of Goyer. I don't think he writes good dialogue for the most part. I'm not a big fan of what I've seen out of Terrio so far, so I'm happy to see some better dialogue happening. I guess I never noticed. I don't know what Zack Snyder does with dialogue. I love Watchmen, but that seemed like most of that came straight out of the comic almost. So, you had a very similar effect with 300. So, I can't judge Snyder on all of that. But yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, that's about
Okay.
it.
Yeah, my whole take on who directed what and how much did he do and how much did he do. At the end of the day, my take is this: I just want the film to be really great. And if by the end credits I come out with a smile on my face, then really who did what is inconsequential to me. But I'm excited, and I know Jordan is because we talked about the trailer in one of our past episodes. Before we bounce out of here, is there anything you want to plug of yours that you want to make mention of?
Sure. Well, first, let me just thank you for letting me be on the show. It was a lot of fun, and my show is called DC On Screen, where we cover the DC Universe properties on film and television, all of the movies, and then we, in the latter half of the show, we talk about the news for Gotham, Lucifer, Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, and we usually even talk about animated features and video games to some degree. We do a weekly show, and then we also do occasional special episodes where we review, and sometimes we interview people. Like we just had Joe McCabe, the author of 100 Things Batman Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, and he was a lot of fun as well. So hopefully we'll have some more interviews coming in the future. But yeah, we have a lot of fun every week, and I hope you guys come check us out, whoever's listening.
Awesome, great. And just to reiterate, we had a blast having you on. We're glad you enjoyed it, and we'll hope you come back at for another one of these kind of discussions and reviews down the line.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
And where can people let's do the typical social media plugs. Where can people find you, David?
DC On Screen, that's where I tweet. It's one word. You can find us, you can like us on the Facebook page, DC On Screen Podcast. We're on Instagram as well. I'm on Snapchat under David C. Robertson. I'm everywhere.
Yeah, so there's no shortage of finding him. It's not a word of mouth situation. You'll find him very easy. Good. Jordan, where can people find you to discuss how wrong you are about the Dark Knight costume?
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram. My handle on both is @BatFanJordanV.
And if for whatever reason you want to talk about me and confirm why Jordan is so wrong about that issue, you can find me @SuperheroSciFi on Twitter. Thanks again, David, for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon. For everybody else, we're one step closer to Justice League, and until our next episode, have a great weekend. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.